The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Slim. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm Pete Ledovitz here with my ever effervescent co-host, a man who actually brings his laser pointer on comedy club stages because he realizes that nothing says back off to a would-be heckler like a 5-milliwatt laser right in the eye. Bill Hunt.
Thank you. Actually, I've been wanting to do that at the, the banquet for the cross-country team where our kids go to school. They get this guy up there, and he talks for 40 minutes just to give the coaches.
And this is about cross-country.
So I just want to bring the pointer to shine it on his forehead so he thinks he's got a gun aimed at him.
There it is. I think we were the first, right? The academics were the first people to misuse laser pointers.
I think so, yeah. I think that's down, and you could see that in Wikipedia. You can look that up on Wikipedia.
So the title of today's show is Medical Imaging Way Beyond X-Ray Specs, and our guest is Dr. Alan Tannenbaum, who was born in New York City in 1953. I can't believe you admit that on your bio.
No, actually, it's 63.
Oh, okay.
Yes. No, it's 53.
And you have some swampland in Florida, I assume, as well.
I was in an accident.
So he attended Columbia University, where he received his B.A. in 1973 in mathematics, correct?
Correct.
And before moving to Massachusetts to attend Harvard University, where he earned his Ph.D. in mathematics, he had quite the prestigious football career at Columbia. We've talked about this before.
Yes, we have. So I was 1 year on the Columbia football team before dropping off.
Okay.
And I was one of the only two freshmen to ever fail physical education as the bench taken on me by the coach.
Oh, really? So you did that poorly in football?
So this was Columbia University, and don't forget it was pass-fail.
Ah, okay.
So everyone passed except my roommate and me. He was also on the football team. He dropped off. So everyone got a P, and we were the only two Fs.
How can you not pass physical education and be on the football team?
Well, because he was so pissed at us for dropping off, he failed us.
Really?
Yeah. I can show you my transcript. Oh, okay. Failed physical education at Columbia.
I'm going to look at the transcript.
And he states
that
as surprise. Yeah.
Well, how old were you when you entered Columbia?
I was 16.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So yes.
You skip your senior year in high school? Or?
No, there was in New York City, there was something called SP in which you were able to do 2 years instead of 3 years in middle school, and then when we moved, I never really went to the fourth grade.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it really wasn't. I mean, there were a lot of kids who were about
16. So you started school when you were 15, and when you were 5, rather, and then skipped a grade.
No, actually, I started when I was 6.
Really? Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Because I was born in January. He didn't give all of the full information. In fact, I was born January 25th, 1953.
And despite the fact he is a complete smart aleck, which will evolve.
Yeah. we'll see that.
The man's a complete genius, and I don't say this about a lot of people, right? Despite the fact he's a mathematician, we won't hold that against him. He's held faculty positions at the Weizmann Institute, Ben-Gurion University, and the Technion, which is sort of Israel's Institute of Technology, also the University of Minnesota. Luckily, he joined the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department here in 1999 at Georgia Tech. He also has joint appointments in biomedical engineering as well.
Yes.
Are you on the bioengineering faculty as well?
So we don't want to go into that, but I am in the bioengineering at IVB.
You know.
But Bill, I want to be in bioengineering in ECE now.
Oh, okay.
I demand it, actually.
Okay, all right. We'll work on
that. Despite the fact
that
you've never taken an engineering course in your life.
No, I have never taken one engineering course in my life. In fact, as I told you, I think I would have a lot of problems passing the qualifying exam. But you kids, you study hard for it.
Yeah, it's coming up in a few weeks.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen, the academic mantra, do as we say, not as we do.
Exactly. Yep.
So now, you're a mathematician, and you work with a lot of the mathematical and algorithmic issues of taking all this new medical imaging stuff that we have, right? Because really what you get is just gigabytes and gigabytes of data every time you look at someone, and get it into a point where doctors can use it in a diagnostic mode.
That's right. So the idea is that you have images with lots of noise. Mm-hmm. It's hard to interpret. and we tried to clean the images, and then we tried to find the regions of interest.
If you've seen the images of my colon, you know what cleaning is all about.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. So you save all your bathroom humor for the second half.
There's going to be a fair amount of it. Break yourself.
I also want to point out, ladies and gentlemen, that this is a live show. So during the second half of the show, 30 minutes after the hour, if you've got a question or a comment about never taking an engineering course, the Columbia football program, what it really takes to fail physical education at Columbia, or medical imaging and why this is interesting and important.
Well, I'm curious if him leaving the football team, if that began that 2 or 3 or 5 year losings, right? They didn't win a game for 3, 4, 5 years?
No. When I left, they started to win. Actually, the Columbia football team, my year, lost every game. And then the next year, Columbia won the Ivy League.
Wow.
When we left the football team, I'm not kidding. If you look at the statistics, look at 70-71, Columbia won the Ivy League.
So if
we
you have
a former
a question
coach
about
here
that
could just die. So all you have to
are
do
are you
going to
let me leave the number? Or
not really. he could just doctor your resume and basically have it that you left 1 year later, so you could, like our former football coach, you could say that you were on there when they were.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sports Talk here on WRK.
By the way, I am open to the position of being the coach of the Georgia Tech football team. I do know
it
a lot about
the
sport. Yeah, I know a lot about the sport. And actually, someone in the Ivy League at that time, Dick Joron, he was playing in the Ivy League exactly at the same time as me, and he is a professional football coach now.
Okay.
He stayed in the sport.
Was he a mathematician as well?
I really don't know, but he was a very good running back.
All right, but like I said, if you want to call in with your pick for the Super Bowl winner this year or your comments about the top 25 in the NCAA, give us a call at 404-894-2468. Once again, that's 404-894-2468. Or if you have a question about medical imaging.
Or about the Bush Doctrine. We're willing to discuss it.
Yes. We're not sure what the Bush Doctrine is.
Exactly. So maybe someone can call in. Me too. Maybe someone can tell us.
If you know what the Bush Doctrine is and how it affects medical imaging, give us a call at 404-894-2468. All right, so now let's at least make a feeble attempt to get back to medical
science
imaging.
We're going
to
do science
in the news. Oh, yeah, let's do science in the news, because it is relevant to our lovely mathematician guest here. I actually have some notes on this. This is from an article from Tuesday Science Times from September 16th in the New York Times by Natalie Angier. It's called Gut Instinct's Surprising Role in Math. You're shopping in a busy supermarket and you're ready to pay up and go home. You perform a quick visual sleep in Bill's case, sweep of the checkout options and immediately start ramming your cart through traffic toward an appealingly unpeopled line halfway across the store. One shopping spree, two distinct number systems in play. Whenever you choose a shorter grocery line over a longer one or a bustling restaurant over an unpopular one, we rally our approximate number system, an ancient and intuitive sense that we are born with and that we share with many other animals, rats, pigeons, monkeys, even Bill.
So, I'm my own species, thank you.
So the article points out that a host of new studies suggest that two number system, the bestial, that's the animal one. I thought
you're just giving me
too much
material.
I'm not making that up. They use that term.
All right.
And the celestial.
We'll get back to bestial.
The more cerebral number system may be profoundly related in insight with potentially broad implications for math education. So basically what they're saying is if you're quick at doing those approximations, right, you may actually be good at numbers. And they even go as far as to suggest that maybe we should be doing some of those number games to get people, you know, intuitively linked to math. And our mathematician believes...
crap.
The technical term get that
FCC ready. I think we're gonna
FCC. It's contextual. He did use the correct.
Yes, I used it fine. Look, I know those seven words of George Carlin. That's not on the list.
Don't test him. He has these memorized.
That C word is okay.
Okay. So the point is, I don't know. Do we care about this? I mean, we should care about getting people interested in math,
sure,
though, right?
Well, why?
Yeah.
So you've got it all covered.
I read the article. Actually, I read the article. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, okay, so animals can judge if, you know, there are more animals than me, therefore I have to flee. All right, I'm willing to accept it. Rats, pigeons, humans, Bill. If he sees, too many people, he'll run away.
If cats see me, they they scatter.
Oh, but, right.
Yeah.
Just
right.
So, you know, and it's
so
also a matter
of... So agoraphobic. That's our mm-hmm. lesson for today.
Also yeah. a matter of size, right? The mm-hmm. larger, the smaller animal sees the larger animal and it right. tries to make itself bigger. Okay, so now how am I going to use this to teach my kids to do basic algebra so they can pass their ECE 3021 course?
Right. Are you implying that there are actually scientific studies that don't necessarily have any relevance?
Oh my God, if it's in the New York Times, of course not. I'm just jealous that I wasn't quoted, so it's bitterness
there
that's
it is.
Coming out now. I'm bitter.
Mathematicians, bitter, table for one. All right, well, so we didn't provide much insight. Bill, any comment on that?
Well, I mean, I think that, yeah, you can certainly do estimates, but the shopping line one is... I think I need something more than just my guess because I always end up in the wrong line invariably.
Oh, I'm terrible at that.
Me too.
You know, I mean, because you can't predict when the old lady in front of you is going to pull out five coupons
that's right.
that
yes.
she's going to use.
Right. If you just go shopping in the middle of the night, no one's there. It works out a lot better.
Or when you...
There's Trent with the... Yeah. And show up in the middle of that. Trent, by the way, is a discrete mathematics major.
So oh, you are? Engineer. So you're a math major here, discrete math?
And we don't hold that against
right.
him.
It was originally indiscrete math. But,
so let's test the New York Times theory. Okay, okay. Trent, so let's say you wanted to attack us, the three of us. Would that be a good idea?
Always with the violence.
Always.
Well, we're talking about bestiality, right? The bestial part of the brain, hunter-gatherer.
I think they use that differently.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see.
I'm going to have to bite my tongue.
Okay. And so what are you asking, Trent?
So I want to see if he can judge if he's one and we're three, even though now I told him the answer, but he didn't guess it. But it's discrete well, mathematics. Three and one are integers,
you're
Trent.
All sitting and you're all older than me. I think I could take you.
Exactly.
I'm
smart.
The old guys are slow.
That's true. That's true. And he's the young buck.
Right. There you go. I think he could take it. You guys are actually formidable in size. And I mean girth as well as height.
Yeah, but we have bad backs.
And you meant that compliment.
I took that into account.
Complimentary
he did.
Way, yeah.
See, so he did a lot of scaling here. That's mm-hmm. what he did, right?
No, let me make a serious comment about teaching math.
Okay.
So probably the only one who has gone through the 60s and actually... So I was 6 years old in 59, mm-hmm. you know, according to the 53. I can do that calculation
right.
quickly.
That's good.
So I went through the new math.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I remember the new math, and the new math confused everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were all of these theories of how to teach math.
Right.
I mean, the old stuff works. I'm sorry to be an old
and
conservative.
And that's just arithmetic and multiplication.
Yes, I mean, to a large extent, doing math well is habit. Once mm-hmm. you get yeah. enough facts and habits, so the idea is picking out patterns right. in the data. So you need some data to pick out the patterns in. Mm-hmm. If you don't have this data, I mean, I can draw all of the circles and all of the Venn diagrams,
right.
I'm
so,
not going to be
so
able to do it well.
So this set theory with the circles was part of the new math that
yeah,
confused
was,
people in the 60s.
Yeah, I was born in 1954. I was, yeah. suffered under the same. It you know, it just sort of... We had group theory or set theory or whatever
yeah,
in the
yeah.
fourth
yeah,
grade.
Yeah, set theory. You had number,
I've never used it again. Right? You know, you talk to the physicists and they'll go, you know, well, bananas and carrots are in the same group. And I'm like, well, you know, have some carrots on your cereal tomorrow morning. Try that on for
so you're saying the intersection of banana and carrots does not work on your cornflakes?
Not really. Maybe raisin
yeah, bread. And I had set theory taught to me by nuns. So we had new math and guilt simultaneously.
And you couldn't keep your hands under the table because they would hit you with the ruler.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm just making a list here. I'm just making a list of keywords for the show. So we've got
bestiality
and none so far.
Bestial math
bestial,
skills.
Not, okay,
animal-like math skills.
I was getting confused.
Okay. All right. So like I said, we probably should talk about medical imaging.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before noise.
Yes.
Right? So there's a lot of noise.
There is.
In these things. So what is noise for our listening audience?
So part of it... So
I mean, apart from what's coming out of your mouth.
No, of course. And apart from... never mind, I won't go there. I'm not going there.
Mathematical. Do we have the dump on?
Yes.
Okay, we got the delay on, ladies and gentlemen. We should be okay.
His finger's like right over...
So you're given a signal, okay? Mm-hmm. And the signal comes out of some sort of physical device.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's really only signal. The noise is the part of the signal you don't like. So there was someone very, very famous. I mean, he's called the rabbi of computer vision. Okay, he was a professor at the University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something very smart. He said, look, You just have an image. The part of the image you don't like is the noise. But the noise comes from physical effects. So, for example, if I have an ultrasound image, okay, you have certain interference patterns because of the nature of the imagery.
Right.
So the interference patterns can confuse me if I want to see a cyst or not, right? The cyst can look like the noise. So somehow I want to get rid of this noise to be able to see the cyst. But the noise is part of the image.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing to be done.
Right.
So the question is, what do we want to see? And that's very much in the hands of the client, of the customer, and that's the physician.
Mm-hmm.
Once we've gotten rid of the noise and the signal, then the idea is to partition the image, to parse it in such a way to its interesting parts. So, for example, cyst and normal tissue.
Right.
Okay, polyps and normal colon, tumor and regular brain cells. Again, all that you have is this image. So the question is, what do they want to see, and how can we differentiate geometrically or statistically this part that we want to capture? And that's really where the mathematics comes in.
And these images, we're talking about things from what? Cathode tomography, magnetic resonance imaging, where you just get, so what is that, positron?
Emission tomography, yes.
Right. So basically, you're shooting radiation or putting something in a magnetic field. And the nice thing about these techniques is we can actually get soft tissue.
In MRI, you can get soft tissue very well.
Right.
With CT, it's harder. I mean, because it's basically a form of X-ray.
X-ray, right. Which is very good at mineralized tissue, bone, teeth.
That's correct.
Like that. Right.
But with MRI, you can differentiate soft and hard tissue.
And so how much data comes from one of these typical MRIs? It's a lot of data.
I mean, it could be huge. So it really depends what they're imaging, but we're talking about gigabytes typically.
Right.
Gigabytes of data.
Just for one image.
Just from one image.
So one torso of a person, one head of a person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we can do it. So, for example, I mean, let's say from a typical body scan, so it's 512 by 512, and it could be several thousand of these.
Right.
So, I mean, just, you know, just multiply
together. So several thousand slices.
Several thousand slices, correct.
Right. Well, and the other issue, of course, is what's the resolution. So there's noise, and then there's the resolution. So you've got to look at what is the feature size you're trying to see.
Great point.
And what's the accuracy or what's the precision with which you can measure that.
Yes.
So do some of your techniques get at trying to sift through the noise and enhance beyond sort of the resolution, or is that even possible?
Well, it is possible if you have different views. So there are techniques called super resolution, which have not been used too much in medical imaging, but, for example, they've been used, let's say, in license plate identification. So you have a license plate, and let's say it's raining or snowing, and you can't see the numbers. So if I have several different views of it, I can, it's basically an interpolation technique in which I can bring the various pieces together and get much higher resolution than would be in a given image. So, yes, that's a very, very good point. Now, there are physical limits. So, for example, if we're looking at some images, let's say, of polyps in the colon. So you're completely right, Bill. I mean, there's a certain resolution for the CT that we can't go beyond. So the question is, have we reached that resolution that makes it practical? In other words, if they want 3 millimeters, okay, or...
Right, so each little dot or pixel in that image represents something that's about 3 millimeters.
Actually, quite a bit smaller. Quite a bit smaller.
Okay.
But on the other hand, I mean, being able to make out enough of the geometry to detect it, is still problematic. So then the question is how well we can detect it. So, I mean, it also depends on the CT machine. So there's now the new 128 slices in which I think the resolution is quite superb and we can get down to 1 millimeter. But you're right, the pixels themselves have a resolution.
Right.
So even though it looks continuous, we have the discrete mathematician here. Each, I mean, basically it's a series of boxes, okay, and that's called a pixel, a picture element. So those have a certain resolution. I mean, you can't go beyond it. And so the information that's not there, well, you're not allowed to invent it. Not like on our set. Damn, yes. So. We never lie, do we?
All right. He just dumped you.
The D word is one of those? Okay.
Look,
all right,
Trent is nice and conservative. This is a scientific show, ladies and gentlemen. We're trying to be reasonable here.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to something you said before, and that was interpolation.
Yes.
And this is a common thing used by engineers and mathematicians. So what is interpolation on its basic level, and how do you use it in in imaging?
So interpolation is that if you have different data sets, somehow you want to fuse them together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's used all the time. So, for example, since this is an audience of normal people,
like you.
Okay, but for example, let's say some of the normal people have graph things, okay, and
yeah.
you have a series of dots.
Right.
Okay, and now you're trying to put the dots together. There are many different ways of putting the dots together to get a curve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're basically interpolating the dots, okay? You're right. fitting things in.
Yeah, you find a curve that explains the gap between two sets of
That's
dots.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which the opposite of that is extrapolating. So
yes.
you've got, there would be, you've got a curve and a bunch of points, and now you're trying to predict what is beyond the data points that you have.
And
that
would be what politicians do. So I'm going to leave that one alone.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, it's the things in which, you know, something happens now and they extrapolate and they tell us that both Bill and I remember this, that, you know, it's 1979, they're looking, you know, at how the Japanese economy is growing,
right.
and then they extrapolate and tell us by the year 2000 the Japanese economy will be the largest in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, this is extrapolation. Speculation, there's another two-word description of it that I cannot say on the air.
Right, because we got to wait for the delay.
Even though George Carlin is dead, what he said was exactly right.
right,
still can't say those words.
Okay.
But yeah, that's true. And you see that in business predictions as well, like when the before the dot-com crash, I mean, one of the things in wireless, that area, was that basically with the extrapolation, every man, woman, and child on the planet would have two cell phones and a pager, you know.
Right.
Yes.
You know, so the market isn't going to be like that. So
mm-hmm.
they extrapolate a straight line, whereas it could saturate. It was going to saturate at some point and get to the point where you have a certain amount of resales.
Right.
Okay.
You know. I mean, I heard the following thing. So if you extrapolate population growth in Europe now.
Right.
So in 500 years, one out of every two Europeans is going to be Albanian. That's an extrapolation. I just thought I'd share it.
So the Albanian's very active.
Exactly.
Everybody's moving out, so the property would be a lot cheaper in Europe than 2,000 years, is what you're saying.
But I think what a lot of people don't realize is the National Institute of Health has its own institute. That's what, imaging and
bioengineering.
Yes,
the new one. That's right. So there is a new one. It's actually an interesting story of how it came to be. So it was really in the last days of the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
And Clinton didn't want an institute. He wanted a center.
And what's the difference between an institute and a center?
So an institute is really one of the major building blocks.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
you have
institutes of health.
Exactly.
NIH,
right. So you have cancer. Mm-hmm. You have alcoholism. You
have mental
drugs,
illness, which is relevant to us.
Which is relevant to the three of us. I mean, etc. So the idea was they wanted this biomedical imaging center.
Right.
Now it turns out that Trent Lott. If you remember Trent Lott.
I remember Trent
Lott. Yes, I've met Trent Lott.
Okay. He might know what the Bush Doctrine is, but anyway.
I think he would. Yeah.
So Trent Lott, I think he was the majority leader of the Senate then. Mm-hmm. I think he was a senator from Mississippi, and his best friend was a radiologist.
Okay.
And so Trent Lott was the one who made the bill to create actually a National Institute of Health centered around imaging. So in fact, now we get the, thank God actually, or thank mm-hmm. Trent, that we
same,
have a whole
same
institute.
Thing.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so, well, before we get heavy into the mathematics, I guess the real question is, what's the big advantage of imaging? When I think of imaging, the huge advantage is they'll put you in a tube for MRI, which is uncomfortable and people don't like that, but it's much preferable to the alternative.
Right, because it's non-invasive.
Right, exactly.
So, for example, we old guys remember the expression, exploratory surgery. What does that mean? Cut the poor soul open, you know,
see
and explore.
What's there,
So now, using these techniques, I mean, you don't have to. So it's unpleasant to be in a tube, I admit it, for let's say half an hour, but no one is being cut open.
Right.
And it makes a lot of surgery unnecessary. Mm-hmm. You can see inside.
Right.
So what we do is the following. So there is problems. There are major problems with interpretation of the imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can imagine why. So you have a radiologist, for example, and he or she is looking at films.
Right.
And you're looking at these films in a dark room, mm-hmm. I don't know, 8 hours a day, and your mind can wander. You might miss certain things. So if you can do it on computer, if a computer can equal that of a human, it's completely reproducible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if I get a call from my spouse and I'm in a bad mood and I say, the hell with this,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to happen with a computer. Everything, and it can be done much more quickly, it can be done in parallel.
Right.
And we talked about these gigabytes of data.
Right.
So that's where the mathematics comes in.
Okay.
So the mathematics is the basis for something called computer vision mm-hmm. and image processing,
right.
of which medical imaging is a special field.
Right.
And the idea is to try to make the computer, quote, see the images like a human.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we our older son, when he was 8, he ended up having to have abdominal surgery, and they were doing the upper GI series. And even though they got that, they, you know, my wife was there and just was starting to talk to the radiologist about, you know, all the different symptoms, and she kind of got, oh, really? Now, it's all on the chart.
Right.
But for some reason or other, you know, she was doing her stock portfolio in her head and did. So she turned him on his side, and then she could see that his colon was only on one side and had become twisted.
Yeah.
If she hadn't rotated him, they would have gone, I don't know. We don't know what's going on.
Right.
And it, you know, so they went from thinking we were overly zealous parents to telling us to, if he throws up green tonight, bring him in tonight, otherwise have surgery tomorrow. But it's exactly that thing where, you know, you're kind of relying on this. With all this technology, you're relying on this verbal exchange between my wife and the doctor. Both they go, oh, you know, and then they have to take a totally different perspective. Yeah.
And it's no longer, you know, a silver emulsion film, like a physical piece of plastic. Now it's all slices, and then the slices can be used to recreate the whole three-dimensional image.
That's right. So there are commercial software packages. Typically marketed by the big companies, let's say Siemens mm-hmm. and General Electric, that they come with the machine, there's a computer, and you have all of these image processing algorithms in them.
Right.
Of course, they're making a killing on it mm-hmm. because they take a very, very simple box. I mean, it used to be a Sun computer.
Mm-hmm.
The Sun computer was about $5,000, and they would charge you $50,000 for the whole box because of the imaging software.
Okay. But you're doing all right because of this, right?
I'm not doing bad. No, I'm not doing badly. I'm saying I'm happy.
Yeah.
Keep it up. I have no...
All right. We are community radio, so let's not have an actual formal ad on here. But do we need to take a break, Shirley?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the virtual colon fly-through. Diagnostic procedure or the new ride at Six Flags. We're not sure. But thank you for joining us here on Inside the Black Box. We'll be back in just a minute on WREK Atlanta.
Tune in to the New Forces Radio Hour, spinning rock and roll records every Tuesday night, 11 to midnight, following Live at Rec, right here on 91.1 FM, WREK.
In the valley so low, it was where I held on you so tight. How did I ever let you go? I remember the first kiss, and oh, how you thrilled me so. Oh, oh, oh. But now all that I can feel right now is that a cold
all the best and craziest electronic music. Tune in every Wednesday evening here on WREK Atlanta from 7 to 9 p.m. to the movies.
Join your host, Matt and Josh, on a space ride through Future 5. From industrial to IDM, from noisecore to bitrock, dub, ambient, and everything in between.
This is Friction.
We grabbed a bunch of carriers back at the mines, and we can't hold them. She's away on us there. House number 14.
14 left passes to 18. Over.
Okay, Little Snow, she's going to hit me that way. Watch the way that boy can get a hold of her, and she might be right on the main line.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, all right. How many cars is there? Yep, over.
He has a hold of about 30.
Going. All right, there now. 50. She's going 50, and I got no control of her.
You got no control of her, Wesley? Are you a couple to those cars, over?
And off of goddamn next to the driver.
Friction, Wednesday, 10 p.m. on WREK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box here on WREK, where we're chatting with our guest, Alan Tannenbaum, about medical imaging. And keep in mind, though, as we're talking about this, if you've had an unpleasant medical imaging procedure or with the alternative to medical imaging and have a question or comment for our guest, give us a call at 404-894-2468.
Yes, so I was going to bring up, sort of looking at why imaging, and it's an evolution in medical practice.
This is Georgia. I'm not sure you're allowed to use that word, evolution.
Evolution, okay.
creation.
Right, I'm from Cobb County, the creation of medical imaging.
Okay. So you had x-rays, and the doctors used to seeing things or touching palpitation and this sort of thing. And so, you know, you could just as easily come up with an algorithm that the answer pops up, polyps, 4 feet in from, Uranus. And can I say Uranus on air?
I already did.
It's a planet. It's a planet. It's a planet anyway. But
you're talking about medicine, so that's okay.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But if you just pop out with an answer, here it is with a 99% probability, the physician's not going to be happy with that. He wants to see, he doesn't want an answer popping out. And a zillion years ago, I worked with Fred Rotz and a bunch of other guys that had been working with Leith and Upatniks, who invented holography at Michigan. And they had come up with an image processing, and then you couldn't digitize the image, so it was through Fourier optics. But the physicians didn't want an answer that said, based on this microscope image of the histology and your algorithm,
right,
yes, there's definitely cancer cells.
But we're not replacing the radiologist,
no,
are we?
No,
I'm just saying
there's you've got to keep in mind with medical technology that there's a transition. People are going to have to be comfortable with it, and that this fits seamlessly into their idea of what making a diagnosis is all about.
Yes. By the way, this is a great point. So the accepted medical imaging algorithms are interactive. So we do not replace the physician, okay? You're completely right. They would be against us doing this. So they see the image on the screen, and then they can work with the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can highlight things and then get information very, very quickly.
Right.
And now if it agrees with their intuition, then they're happy.
Right.
And all of the good algorithms, I mean, what's the ground truth? The ground truth is you ask certain experts.
Right.
You ask certain experts, and if you're within 5% of what the experts tell you, then you have a product, and then you can do it much more quickly to help them.
Okay.
But one has to be very, very careful. So, for example, I remember at the Brigham's, we did a study of surgery.
This would be Brigham and Women's Harvard's
hospital.
Teaching Hospital.
It's Harvard's Teaching Hospital. So it was a certain surgical procedure, I think, on the ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is what, the anterior cruciate ligament, right?
Okay,
the thing that messes up your knee as an athlete.
I mean the thing that was torn of Tom Brady and lots of other football players.
And it ended your football career too, didn't it?
Actually not. I just failed and that was it.
Wasn't that a supermodel injury?
That can mess up your ACL.
It can.
There it is. Sexism alive and well.
I'm shocked. I'm just shocked.
I know you're shocked.
Anyway, so we gave MRI images, mm-hmm. I think it was to 10 experts, and the idea was on exactly the same images, find the ligament. So they took the cursor, and the idea was to outline the ligament.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a difference of about 15%, okay, of these experts trying to find the ligament.
Right.
15%.
Oh, just finding it?
and outlining it. So they found it, but it's out. It's actually finding. It's actually finding the boundary.
Right. But if you've looked at these images, you mentioned it before. There is noise in them.
I know.
They're a little
fuzzy.
I'm
just saying it's not. It goes beyond just analyzing the data and saying, call me in the morning. Yeah. You know, it's.
But this is pretty frightening because if you're talking about an ACL.
Yeah.
All right. So if they mess up, you're going to limp some and you won't be able to ski as well. But think about a brain tumor.
Yeah.
15%, and I'm a vegetable. And so what happens many times in these surgical procedures is that they're very conservative. They don't want to cut too much
because
they don't want to cripple you.
Right.
But if they don't cut enough, then the tumor returns.
Right.
And so that many times happens. So it's very, very important to get the correct resolution, to get much more accurate algorithms.
Okay.
And these problems are largely unsolved.
Right, but what you're basically looking at is trying to look for mathematical differences or patterns in basically contrast, right? Because what you see is different shades, right? Normal tissue looks one way, tumor looks another.
But also texture. Texture is very important. And now for certain things, you can have directionality. So, for example, it's quite amazing. You can actually look at our website at BME and see some images. So you have diffusion tensor imagery. So you can pull out the white matter of the brain and actually see the wires of the brain and what direction it's going.
Ah, okay.
And because water diffuses. So when you put the brain, the head, through a magnetic field, you can actually control the directionality and make the water diffuse in a certain direction. It's amazing.
And that's when you look at MRI, that's basically nuclear magnetic resonance. You're basically looking at the chemical state of the water.
Right. Yes.
And actually, Haskell-Beckham is going to be in here in a few weeks talking about exactly that.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, you should not use the word nuclear in medicine.
It's frightening.
People get really scared. They think it's radioactive.
Well, that's why we call it MRI now, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we remove the N word.
Right. That's nuclear.
I'm not kidding.
That's
absolutely the case. So let's say chemists say NMR.
Right.
But if you tell a patient, I'm going to NMR you, I'm going to nuke you. They get a little bit concerned.
Right.
But in any event, for example, in surgical planning, again, you don't want to cut these wires.
Right.
So it's very, very important to see the placement of the tumor in relation to these wires.
Right.
And this is a very hot topic now.
Wow.
And this is part of data fusion, right, because you have the DTI part. You also have functional imaging.
Wait, what's the DTI?
The DTI is exactly the diffusion tensor imaging.
Okay,
so that gives you directionality. Then you have the tumor, which is ordinary MRI.
Let's back up a little, because we've got a slurry of things. I don't even know what they mean. So diffusion, I know a tensor is like a matrix or rows and columns
of numbers.
It's a
quantity with two directions.
More. Right. But, I mean, you know, it's a bunch of data in a...
Yes.
Like in a table. It's a table of data, if you will. And so what's the diffusion?
Okay, so the idea is that the water, because basically we're talking about a wire, we're talking about a pipe, and the pipe has water, and we're making the water move in a certain direction. So you can pick up, the direction that the water is moving.
Okay.
So the tensor, the technical term tensor, has this directionality built into it. And so you get a series of these tensors of directions that it's like you're having arrows pointing along the direction.
Right.
You now can connect the arrows
so
and pull out the
pipe. So you're basically mathematically able to kind of figure out where the water's flowing in the brain?
Yes. Water flows along nerve conduits is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Oh, great.
And these nerve conduits are called axons. So it's some fluid, but the main part of the fluid is water after all.
Right.
I mean, we're mainly water. We're basically bags of water.
Right. Except for Bill.
Seawater.
Was mainly
seawater.
Iced tea.
It's mostly iced tea.
I mean, and this is a creationist theory, by the way, that we're water.
The iced tea theory. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me stop for a second and point out that advanced mathematics is actually telling you where... these firing neurons in the brain are. This is important stuff.
It's very important. And by the way, the mathematics is advanced.
Yeah.
So the mathematics involved is something called differential geometry. Differential geometry is a basic field in, let's say, physics. I don't want to simply drop words, but let's say relativity theory of Einstein. I mean, these are basic tools, and it's basically geometry on curved surfaces. And so this geometry on curved surfaces now has become intimately part of image processing and computer vision and medical imaging.
Right.
But there's a third aspect to it. So there's also functional imaging.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, and this is again some of this New York Times study. So they're telling you, okay, you put someone in MRI and you tell them to do bestial math
mm-hmm.
and celestial math, and different parts of the brain light up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's detected in the MRI.
Oh, right.
Because what happens is, so the theory is that blood is flowing, and you're picking up the blood flow, the blood content, and that's giving you a functional idea of what's happening.
Right.
You know, you've seen these popular articles that men and women do math differently, and a man's brain it lights up in a certain
and
part.
Teenagers are different than adults.
That's
Bill
right.
Bill is different than normal mammals.
I have some similar to some mammals, but like when my wife tells me to take out the garbage, it's just blank. And all information input is being shut off. It's clear.
True. Yeah. You know, so one of the studies of functional imaging is that women can multiplex. We can. So you're watching the football game. Your wife is talking.
Yeah, we've
to
talked
you.
About this before.
Oh,
you know, you cannot. You know, you don't hear her, and she's really pissed off at you.
Yeah.
And you just don't hear what she's saying.
But women cannot multiplex during their soap opera.
Okay,
that's a multiplex during the football game I want to watch.
So, in addition,
I think your engineer is cutting this conversation off from the FCC.
I think your wife's listening.
Oh, God, okay.
In addition to brain chemistry, though, I mean, the single most significant contribution of advanced mathematics would be the imaging of the colon, right? So let's talk about this virtual colon fly-through, because this eliminates the ability of the sigmoidoscopy, the colonoscopy, which is just a violation on so many levels. Nobody
likes
that.
Don't they call that virtual gerbil?
Okay, no, I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to...
I thought that was the product.
You're
name.
Just going to give
it a funny joke. We're not touching that one.
He's going to make the mouse cursor look like that.
Thanks for not touching it.
Okay, so what is a virtual colon fly-through?
Okay, so the idea is as follows. So you basically CT the colon. You CT
so this
the
is
abdomen.
This three-dimensional x-ray, cathode
exactly.
tomography, right.
And... Then, as we mentioned before, you can take the 2D slices and create a 3D image. And mm-hmm. that involves interpolation, it involves segmentation, it involves all of the
terms. All this advanced mathematics, right.
Okay, so now what you have basically, you have a 3D image of a twisted tube.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can try then, sort of, I mean, virtually, to fly through it. What does it mean? So think of endoscopy, what they're actually mm-hmm. doing. I hope most people have eaten lunch.
So endoscopy is basically a camera okay, which end are we going in here?
We're going through the rear end.
Okay.
You're sticking a tube up the rear end. Now, first of all, before you stick the tube there, you want to make sure everything is clean.
Right.
So how is it cleaned? Well, there's a substance which is referred to euphemistically as go lightly.
Okay.
So go lightly will... 24 hours before the procedure will clean everything out and more.
Okay.
And people hate it because you have to drink, I mean, this go lightly, I think, once an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically clean everything out until just liquid is coming out.
Okay. So
and people hate it.
It's called go lightly, but it really makes you go heavily.
Yes, it does.
I've been waiting all hour for that joke. I realize that. Okay.
So once everything is cleaned out...
Mm-hmm.
Then a tube is inserted, okay, mm-hmm. with a little camera, and basically you basically keep on going. And of course, you need sedation to do this.
And
okay.
a little tiny cameraman running the camera.
Yes.
But they don't put you completely out, right?
No, it's just sedation.
They just give you a couple shots of vodka.
A couple of vodka. No, they can't because that will violate the go nightly.
Okay. I went completely out.
Oh, were you completely out?
Yeah. Okay. I woke up and, you know... The doctor was cuddling me, and I had no
so
idea.
So spooning. You woke
he
up
was
to spooning.
So anyway.
How'd that go?
I knew the cheap bathroom humor would get out of hand, but we anticipated this, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is.
We anticipated, but we didn't do anything to
that's
correct it.
That's what makes this a cutting-edge show.
Yeah,
science
right.
and cheap jokes
yes,
together
right.
at last.
Yes.
Well, and I mean, that summarizes our careers. So anyway.
Basically, yes.
So anyway, so then you have to be sedated. The tube is inserted. Then they basically look around. So you can think of, let's say, you have a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And you're flying through the tunnel, okay?
Right.
So you're seeing and you're looking at various parts, polyps. What's a polyp? It looks like a little mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sphere on a stalk.
Mm-hmm.
So now virtually what you can do is you do the same thing. So you extract the colon
mm-hmm.
virtually. And now you define a center line virtually.
Right.
And now you fly through. You have a center line. So you're like on a little airplane flying through the colon.
All right. But my question is, when the radiologists do this with a cursor, you don't hear any of them going, wee, do they?
landing gear is not down.
Well, a lot of patients, in fact, are even sedated when this
when they watch this, I'm guessing.
Because the two procedures share the following thing. So, again, not getting into this type of bathroom humor, but both procedures need you to inflate the colon, i.e., they have to pump air into it to blow it up.
So whether they do, even for the virtual one in the NMR.
I ordinarily just do that myself.
Okay.
Yes.
Whereas in many other older procedures, they would put a contrast agent, some barium type thing.
So now the question is, so in some procedures, even virtually, there is a contrast agent.
Okay.
Okay, as well. And if you do not want to clean out the colon here, so there is material in the colon.
Right.
So you have to do it either the person being prone and supine, either on the stomach or on the back.
Right.
So without, I mean, you can imagine that when you're on your stomach, that material is down.
Yes.
Okay, and when you're on your back, it's also down, but in the opposite side.
Direction,
so that way you get both views. Now you interpolate both views, and you get a completely clean view of the colon.
Okay.
And that's the way it's done.
And the contrast agent is there because if you're using CT, which is basically an X-ray, X-rays, you know, get better contrast when they hit something that's dense, like bone, this calcium hydroxyapatite stuff. So you usually put in some metal oxide. It's usually a barium-type thing that comes in a little – it's basically a barium enema, which is, doesn't sound pleasant either.
So if you want if you want a virtual CT, the best type of thing to have is an all-fat diet. Because the fat has much lesser density, than the wall of the colon. So it was even suggested that if you don't want to do the go lightly and you're not having problems with cholesterol, give the patient an all-fat diet for 1 week before the procedure.
Okay.
And then you don't
pasta.
Need to
eat it,
right?
So you'll see it better. In that week, you might actually develop the polyps from the bad diet.
And you also might develop heart disease.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, look, life is a choice.
So the advantage is you do avoid the television camera up the hiney. That's what
you do.
Avoid.
Now, but still, the television camera up the hiney is the preferred method for the following reason. Because when they see the polyp, they can zap it. Okay?
Oh, because they're there. So they can put a little laser at the end, much like Bill blinding the audience with his laser pointer.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the reason that the virtual technique is used, so there's a certain percentage of the population, about 10%, that their colons are very, very sensitive and they can become inflamed or even punctured.
Oh, just by bumping into the walls
with
the camera.
Exactly. It's very, very sensitive to endoscopy.
Okay.
So for these 10%, you really can't do the endoscopy. It's much too dangerous.
Right.
But 10% is big.
That's a lot of people.
And since they're suggesting everyone over 50 to have this procedure, we're talking about a major market.
Right.
So now, I mean, there are programs to do this. Let's say, for example, GE has the Navigator package in which it's done.
The Navigator?
Yes.
Sounds like a video game, new for the Xbox 360.
And by the way, the accuracy now with the new CTs is very, very powerful.
Is Madden going to come out with another video game?
I'm not going there.
3D.
I'm just not going there.
Well, that can be our chance to
Madden
get back into
colon
football.
Madden endoscopy. There you have it.
Yeah, Madden 3D.
Okay. So, but are you implying that because the resolution of all these instruments, the hardware is getting better and better and better, that one day will most people not have the
Heine
scope?
Because having the Heine scope.
Right.
Means that you can actually treat the polyps when you find them.
Right.
So it's always going to be for this audience.
Okay.
Right now, the resolution, is there.
Okay.
I mean, I think the resolution is very, very good. So at the RSNA, about 2 years
ago,
Radiological Society of North America, which is in Chicago the first week after every Thanksgiving. So you have 55,000 radiologists hanging out.
I bet that's
partying.
A party time.
Oh, man.
They shut the city down for that.
These guys are crazy.
Are they really?
Oh, boy.
Oh,
come with some radiologists alone, in Chicago, week after Thanksgiving.
That's it. Avoid the week after Thanksgiving in Chicago.
You should. You'll never find the hotel.
Okay.
But anyway, The resolution is quite, so for example, in our experiments, we, again, at the Brigham's, Brigham and Women's Hospital, we've now tested over 100 patients, and we're absolutely competitive with a professional radiologist or gastroenterologist. Absolutely competitive. And in fact, in two cases, we found something that they didn't find.
Ah, so when you say competitive, you mean your algorithms that look for differences in texture and contrast can find stuff as well or better than they
Yes,
can.
And that's the test. Okay. In other words, we have to say that. But ultimately, I mean, they're going to look at the images. So we're not going to replace them ever.
Right. So it, so
it's confirmatory
then.
I mean,
yeah, that's right.
They'll still, and, you know, it's the
it flags stuff.
Well, the buck stops there, right? I mean, it's the doctor that's going to make the ultimate decision. It's the doctor that's going to get sued for malpractice or whatever.
Yes.
It's not Alan Tannenbaum. You know,
I didn't know what you said.
He didn't know. Yeah, he just
I'm just a mathematician. I'm not involved at all in this procedure. Yeah. Right? Especially with the go lightly jokes.
But you talked about something a little while back that some people, 10%, which is huge, there's some probability non-zero that you might end up puncturing the colon.
Yes.
What do they do now? Just bump until they rip something open and say, oops, or what do they...
So typically, in a very small number of cases, is the colon punctured, but what happens is that the colon becomes very much inflamed and then liable to be punctured. And you know when you have an inflamed colon, it's extremely, extremely painful.
Okay.
And so then the idea is that these people also are more prone to have polyps, and therefore they should be screened more often. Mm-hmm. So therefore you would use the virtual method on them.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. So what else do our listeners need to know about, you know, imaging and this sort of thing? Where do you think this is going?
Look, I'll give you another very, very hot topic, which is very popular in the state of Georgia. And actually, we have some of the best people.
And this is just because of the consumption of boiled peanuts, is that it?
Probably. No Jimmy Carter jokes, please.
Okay.
One of the hottest topics at Emory now is soft plaque detection, which is very similar. It's like the CT.
Okay.
So you know the cases.
And soft plaque, we're talking about plaque in arteries?
We're talking about plaque in the coronary arteries.
Yes.
And I think a number of us know cases in which someone was on a treadmill. And someone passed the treadmill with absolutely flying colors.
So this is the treadmill stress test.
Exactly.
Like to yeah. They put you on an EKG. And they put you on a treadmill.
And they measure everything.
And they look at the waves in your heart.
And it's perfect.
Sort of stuff.
Right. It's absolutely perfect, and they can't see any blockage. It's absolutely perfect. And the next day, that person is dead of a heart attack. And
this was one of the
good. Oh, I know a number of cases like this.
Wow.
So the question was a mystery. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there's no obvious calcification of the heart either, of these coronary arteries. So what's believed now is that you have soft plaque embedded in the walls of the arteries. And what happens is the soft plaque can break, okay? And this is the thing that causes the blockage that causes a heart attack.
Ah, okay.
So the idea is to try to automatically detect the soft plaque. It's very difficult. And even the hard plaque that people believed was very dangerous is much less dangerous.
Because it doesn't break off.
It doesn't. It stabilizes.
Yeah, exactly. So hard plaque meaning it's got some more calcium salts.
That's right.
In it. It literally is harder.
And you see it as white, like bone.
Yeah, and the soft plaque breaks off in, say, an aorta or something that's a big artery.
No, on a small one. But
so these are actually in the coronary arteries?
These are in the coronary arteries. So they have the various key ones. So they're not the tiny ones that you need nitroglycerin to see, but it's not something huge like the aorta.
Okay. And these are seen in ultrasound images?
In
or
CT.
CT.
In CT.
So it's an X-ray.
You can see, by the way, Bill, you're right. So you can have transvascular ultrasound, which you can see them. But again, that's an invasive procedure. You have to stick something in.
Yeah,
So it's not just an echocardiogram where they basically do an ultrasound of your heart.
Well,
you you put the probe in the arteries.
Yes.
Well, the other thing, too, with ultrasound, if you're trying to do it from the surface, you've got to go through all the tissue up to the carotid. And if you're overweight, then you got more tissue, and the resolution is worse because of a loss of signal.
Those
are the people you need to see it best on.
That's right. We are talking about a real procedure. In the case of CT, again, you stick someone somewhere.
Oh, okay.
So in any event, this is one of the great challenges now of medical imaging, mm-hmm. and to try to detect the soft plaque. And I think that the Atlanta area mm-hmm. is really one of the major players, I mean, because of Emory.
Cool. Wow, okay. Cool.
And you?
I don't say that.
Yeah, he's very modest.
We'll say that,
actually,
you're a guest
his
on our
bio
show, so you are.
Points out he's authored over 230 publications. That's actually over 400, which he would not say because he's a modest human being.
No, actually, I pointed that out to you.
You pointed it out to me.
Yeah, because
it,
Gary
it was
May.
A you wanted
that, my
to do
boss
that.
Might be listening, so I just wanted, you know.
Gary, he's not as wacky as he seems. He's very prolific. All right, we're getting to the end of the show, so we really need to wrap up and try.
Can I give our keywords? So we have keywords from the show, which we should post on the web.
Are we going? And actually, again, we'll try to post some of these images.
Bestial, nun, cyst, polyp, politician, and enema.
You forgot Heinecam.
Heinecam.
Is that a new one? Can we?
Absolutely. And Bush Doctrine.
Bush Doctrine.
I'm obsessed with the Bush
Quite
Doctrine.
Quite related to the Heinecam, actually.
I'm absolutely.
That would imply there was thought behind it.
I want to point out, the one thing we learned is that mathematics, not just the kind of mathematics you use to figure out the tip, that basic approximation, but advanced mathematics is actually contributing to keeping us mm-hmm. keeping us alive, right? Let's say that.
By the way, so initially when we were trying to introduce this advanced mathematics and imaging, there was tremendous resistance.
And this was from the physicians?
Of course. I mean, because, mm-hmm. You're going to talk to a physician about, you know, general relativity. And so it's a black box for them.
Right.
But now people working very much in medical imaging, again, at places like the Brigham's, MGH.
There's a lot of them.
Right. Johns Hopkins. They're converts now. I mean, it's become, mm-hmm. there are IEEE journals on medical imaging.
Right.
They are converts now to these techniques because they work.
Yeah.
And they work many times in real time.
Right.
So it is a revolution. There is a revolution now in medical imaging going on.
But the revolution now isn't so much that we're going to replace radiologists. It's now, instead of looking at flat X-rays day in and day out, they have this three-dimensional image, and what can happen is the mathematical algorithms can run it and say, look, we think there are polyps here, we think there's a cyst here, we think there's a tumor here, and flag all this stuff. Then you can look at it, and in based of years of experience at looking at it, saying, you know, that really looks like one, and the computer says so. Or, you know, that doesn't look quite right. It doesn't have the right shape. Maybe that is noise. We don't know. But at least you have the possibility to consider.
That's exactly correct.
Wow.
And moreover, the revolution is on the physics side because the hardware is improving as well.
Right.
And these are physicists and engineers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. We're just talking about the software side.
No. But I mean, in both cases, areas. I mean, one, you know, it's glove and
one
hand.
Helps other.
Yeah. And in an MRI, I mean, that's a magnetic technique. You pointed that out before. We're just making more efficient ways to put you in a higher and higher magnetic field all the time. So, mm-hmm.
so before, I mean, typically in clinical studies, it was 1.5. Now 3 tesla, mm-hmm. which is a much higher field magnet, has become very, very common.
Yeah. Just a few tesla. That is the kind of magnetic field that is huge, that will erase every magnetic card you have when you even get near that.
That's
ladder,
right.
So. Right. I mean, so they switched to Tesla, right? Tesla would be many, many Gauss. Gauss was our old...
Well, but Nikola Tesla, there was a book written about him. Apparently he was this great genius that no one appreciates.
Yeah, that's what I read as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So anything else we want to
add? No, it's a great show. I learned a lot.
Great show. We haven't been
banned
by the FCC
yet. I'm eager to go back and get my next colonoscopy.
We snuck in some cheap bathroom
humor. I will interpret your images if you like.
I'd rather that you not be present.
No, I won't be present. By the way, we did
too delicate a procedure for you to be standing there.
We did do a colonoscopy of a very, very famous person. Uh-huh. I can't reveal the name. In Georgia, mm-hmm. and he was also quite well off.
He goes by the name of Tom Cruise.
I won't say. Mm-hmm. But we had it segmented, flown through, and even a CD that he could show at dinner.
Wow.
All in 1.5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And now, do they put a soundtrack on this, like The Girl from Ipanema and the Cruises Through the Cult? That would be good. I think you could charge more for that.
That's a good idea.
Do people actually play their DVDs of their... Because I have played my daughter's ultrasound for people.
Yeah.
Right? I actually played it for class and talked about, you know, Doppler shifts so they can get the velocity of the heart and used it as a teaching example. But I'm not sure I would put the virtual call in.
No, he actually wanted it to show. He wanted to show it, okay, to friends in the evening.
And he's like, Miriam, get over here. I got something to show you.
Well, the guy was 70 years old, mm-hmm. and he was a vegetarian.
Right.
And this guy had the colon of an 18-year-old boy.
Wow.
So I have really cut down on red meat
quite
a bit.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm sorry.
No, meaning, you know, no accumulated red meat.
Exactly.
I don't think we should put down the colon of an 18-year-old boy as one of the keywords.
He means that only in a purely clinical sense.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, all right. So. With that, Alan, thanks for being on
my
the program.
My pleasure.
And ladies and gentlemen, next week we're going to have Dr. Bruce Rose from the Weather Channel talking to us about weather prediction and how we get all that weather prediction on everybody's BlackBerry and TV all over the world.
Cool.
So thanks for joining us here this week on Inside the Black Box. We'll be back next week with Science Only Funnier here on WREK Atlanta.